The Joe Project. The Joe Project seeks to discover the intersectionality between mental health and the gospel. We want to debunk myths and stop over-spiritualizing mental health. Valerie, how are you?
I'm actually really tired today.
You said that yesterday.
Huh?
You said that yesterday.
I did.
You were tired yesterday.
I don't know, y'all. I think I need to go to a doctor, check some, because I have been abnormally fatigued.
And this is not just because we're recording at 8 o'clock at night?
I mean, it might have in part to do with the fact that it is 8 o'clock at night, but it's more like I wake up exhausted, and then I stay exhausted throughout the day. Like, my energy doesn't increase. And that's concerning to me. I got stuff to do. We have a whole baby to take care of. And I feel like my functioning is just
there's a whole plane crashing. Question, did you ever see that movie Sully about the guy who, you're not even gonna let me finish? Do you know what the movie's about?
Nope.
Could I tell you?
Sure.
Just for a second?
I know I haven't seen it, but continue.
The guy who landed the US Airways plane in the Hudson River. So it reminded me of
Don't come for me in the comments.
No, because this guy was flying and like he took off from like LaGuardia or something. And while he was still taking off, he was like above Manhattan Island. Birds hit the plane and took out both of the engines.
Boy.
And he didn't have enough time to get back to LaGuardia or any of the airports in the area. So he was like, guess I'm going to land this in the Hudson.
Whoa.
So that's how you feel? You feel like you're in the Hudson?
Ew. Can I be like a beach? Oh, like I'm in the water on the beach just kind of like floating like...
You're so dramatic.
Because the Hudson is giving gross.
The Hudson isn't...
I know. But no. I'd prefer a Caribbean island.
That's misinformation. Everybody thinks that the Hudson River is gross. And I need you to... Where's my camera? Look at me, camera. All right? The Hudson River... is disgusting, but not for the reason that you think. It's because the ground underneath the Hudson is mud. That's why it's nasty. Also because, you know, it is New York City, so. I'm just saying, it's not like a nuclear wasteland. It's just like a biohazard. That's all it is.
Exactly. Anyway, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Chris, what are we talking about?
I'm doing fine, actually. You know, I'm a little bit tired.
How are you, babe? How is your day? I noticed you're not wearing your wedding ring. What are you trying to say? I'm just kidding.
Really?
I know we're married.
In front of the whole internet?
I know you love me and you're totally committed.
And you know what?
A ring is simply a symbol.
The ring is up there on our cabinet because I take it off
the dishes.
So that I don't damage it when I'm doing the dishes like a good husband. I'm doing great. today was a good day. The baby was chilling. She followed her routine, more or less.
Yeah.
In one of our previous episodes, I talked about how the baby was just not following a routine because she didn't feel like it. Because that's what...
Babies do.
That's what babies do.
They sure do.
But yeah, so today was good. I did some editing. I attempted to do some songwriting, and I did not get any songwriting done, and that's fine. But I did play the guitar, and the baby did smile at me singing and did smile at me playing the guitar. So a win is a win.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, now you can ask me what we're talking about.
Chris.
Yeah.
What are we talking about today?
I'm going to answer that question with not the answer.
Okay.
I actually haven't showed you these, but you and I, we have a ritual. It used to be every single night, but now we kind of save it up for like one night every like 6 or 7 days. We're constantly sending each other TikToks. It's a love language, I promise. And sometimes we, you know, just lay down and laugh and cackle and look at each other's faces, right? And there's been a TikTok creator. I don't know his name. If I find it, then I'm going to put it in the description of this video or in the show notes. But he's actually a guy who does a lot of criticism on ADHD creators. That's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Just about to correct him. Good job, babe.
Thanks. There's been a large crop of people creating content around ADHD. A lot of people discovering that maybe they, in their 30s, also have ADHD. And this guy literally, I think he's made it his job to go and be like, that's misinformation, and like calling out misinformation from creators who claim to be ADHD creators, because a lot of them also will do like services for people with ADHDs, like, hey, do you want me to coach you in how to deal with this or that or the other, or organize your life or whatever, right? And I love that, because I hate misinformation. I hate when people misuse the truth in a way that then hurts the people that need that truth the most, right? And the reason why I bring him up is because our topic today is the weaponization and commercialization of mental health. Mm-hmm. I want to put the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild sound effect right there.
Which editing one? Chris,
the one from the shrines. editing Chris, cut it in right there.
And Legend of Zelda people, you already know. They're going to be like, LOL, get that reference.
Before we jump into it, I'm really, really big on definitions. Maybe it's because I was a teacher. Maybe it's because I'm a writer. All of that stuff. And this is kind of low-hanging fruit, because I feel like people have an idea of what weaponization is. But what would you define weaponization to be?
I think people using information incorrectly to justify some feelings they may have towards another person, a group of people, etc. And unfortunately, in this context specifically, it's used incorrectly. Yeah.
Got it. I'll take commercialization. Commercialization is just charging people money for things that they deserve. I'll say it like that. Things that they...
These
like,
are our own definitions. We did not look up the Google did definitions.
Did not. I hit my computer's right here. Why didn't I do that? Commercial. Can't spell. Commercialization.
Bill.
We bless the Lord. For
give us 2 seconds as we
we're already literally already there. Commercialization is the process of managing or running something principally for financial gain. So like that's the primary reason for it. Mm-hmm. Ooh, and I love that they said principally for financial gain.
Like
that's,
that is the
it's underlined primary on Google.
Whole vision statement is I'm trying to make money.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. And then weaponization is when something is adapted for use as a weapon, of course, or exploited for the purpose of attacking a person or group, or for spreading discord. All right, so those
like
two,
I said,
exactly what Valerie said, except in Google language. So,
I'm smart. Okay.
So, first off, let's just jump into like what our thoughts are about like mental health being weaponized. First and foremost, how do you see mental health, mental wellness, psychology, all of that? How do you see it being weaponized?
Not everybody that you disagree with is a narcissist has narcissistic personality disorder.
I don't know what sound I just made, but it was a good one.
Listen. Narcissism is a very, I would say, very popular point of conversation. Mm-hmm. They are such things as narcissist or people who have narcissistic tendencies. There are systems of narcissism or narcissistic systems where the image is better than the actuality of what the system is meant to provide. Mm-hmm. You see it a lot in church, unfortunately. Then there's somebody or people who have narcissistic personality disorder, which is a set of symptoms that a person has to have that is pervasive, that is insidious, that doesn't discriminate according to situations, people, etc., it will show up in various shapes or form. Now, a lot of the research, I think, especially talking about Dr. Romani, who I love, she's really big on researching narcissism. And as they're doing this research, they're finding that there are different types of narcissist or different types of narcissism. So sometimes it may not be the blatant, grandiose thinking of a specific person that we all know who, you know, became the world leader at some point. That would be, I think, more of people's understanding of narcissism. That I would say, and I cannot diagnose from afar, neither can psychologists, psychiatrists, that is not ethical. However, there are patterns that are observable, that have are pervasive, and that have continued on despite circumstance, age, relationships, status, etc. And I'm basing it off of the book that I read about this particular individual, written by a close family member that observed them over time, did their history. Yes, I'm talking about a specific person. However, all to say, it's very pervasive. It's very challenging to navigate. A lot of people who deal with narcissism are people who are creating a facade with which to live by in order to get away from what internally is probably a very dark place. Mm-hmm. Difficult place to be. All to say, I think that has been weaponized a lot. Like, people are just shouting out, that's narcissistic. They're gaslighting me. That's another thing. I'm being gaslit. Gaslit literally means you and I are having a conversation. I am giving you receipts of what I have said, what I'm currently saying, behaviors that I observe, and you're basically trying to distort the reality that I live in. Now, everybody has their own perception. Perception is reality, right? So everybody has a different perception. I'm not saying that there's a break from reality. I'm saying I can literally record our conversation, play it back to you so you can hear yourself. And somebody who may be narcissistic or antisocial or fill in the blank, whatever have you, doesn't have to be somebody with a disorder to gaslight. But they'll listen to that, listen to themselves talking. The person that's recording is like, this is what you said. This is what I heard. This is what was messed up about it. And they'll be like, I didn't say that. You edited that. You changed that. Wow. There's no way. That is an example of gaslighting. So the person that is recording it is like, and after a while of that, it's hard to kind of discern and figure out, like, what is truth? Can I trust my own instincts in this situation? Like, gaslighting is a form of manipulation, low-key psychological and emotional abuse, because you are constantly subjecting my person to a false reality, or subjecting me to think that I have a false reality, or I can't perceive things correctly, or I can't trust my own instinct and what my intuition tells me. I hope that makes sense.
Right. So that's the actual definition of gaslight.
I don't have, like, the dictionary definition. I'm basing it off of...
We got it. We're basically... Yes. It's a colloquial definition, but that's the actual... that's an actual example of what gaslighting, what it would look like. And exactly. What do people say gaslighting is?
Like, I think people utilize gaslighting as, I said this, this person disagreed with what I said, and totally misconstrued my intention and things of that nature and told me about it, and now we're calling it gaslighting.
I just had a thought.
What?
All right.
That's just an example.
I know. Because...
I hear it all the time, and I'm like, are you sure?
Right. So the episode... So here's the thing. The episode's not about gaslighting, but I love that you brought that up, because it also relates to the other things that we would consider... weaponizing, right? Especially since we just to go back to the definition, we're talking about something that is exploited for the purpose of attacking a person, right?
Or for spreading discord.
And for spreading discord, right? So the first thing I thought of when you started talking about the gaslighting thing is trivialization, right? Yes. I thought about the fact that for you, for not for you, for the example that you gave, oh, he's gaslighting me is equivalent for some people, and it shouldn't be. Some people equate that to he's lying, or he's gaslighting me, we disagree. Maybe that's clearer, right?
He or she, by the way. He or she.
It's a gender neutral example.
Person.
The one I hear the most is I like my desk a certain way, so I'm OCD. We don't even need to get into the complete definition of OCD just yet.
Because we have multiple episodes addressing this.
Right? And I'm not just talking about, hyperbole, right? Because I know that we also are a culture that says, I'm hungry, so I'm starving, right? And for me, language is important. So, like, if I'm hungry, I try not to say I'm starving. Sometimes I do because it's just part of our language. But I also know that there are actual people that are starving, right? I don't push that onto other people. I'm just saying that that's for me. However, I will say for things like OCD, I also hear it with, I had a bad day, so I'm depressed. No, you're not. Get out of here, right?
And or, with my job, I can tell you specifically what it takes to be clinically depressed.
But I've been in, not necessarily with my friends, but I've been around people who have been around their female friends, their friends who have periods, and they're like, oh, nah, she's like very moody. She's like so bipolar this week. I'm like, that's, at the time, I didn't have this this information. It just felt wrong because I'm like, why are you calling her names? But I just keep thinking back to how much we have trivialized the language around mental health, especially the disorders, and turned that into something that we kind of just throw on anything. So why is that dangerous? Why is trivializing these words and just placing them onto? Because it really, here's the thing, puts it on like the lowest common denominator, right? You say you're depressed, you're not clinically depressed, you're sad. You say I'm so OCD, you're not OCD, you like a clean space, right? These are that we're using clinical terms to describe things that are not clinical, and you do not have that particular disorder. You do not have that particular mental state. So why is it dangerous to use these terms for things that are arguably not applicable?
Because the people who do experience these symptoms do have obsessive compulsive disorder, actively are in the middle of a major depressive episode. People who are subject to narcissistic systems, having to deal with abusive situations with people who are narcissistic, the gaslighting, all of that stuff, it trivializes, I'm going to use that word, their experience. In that, well, if this is the broad definition of gaslighting because everybody's using it, then how do I really know I'm experiencing it? So now maybe I don't think I'm being gaslit. I'm like, well, maybe I'm over exaggerating, or maybe I'm overthinking it. And that's problematic. Like, ma'am, you are being psychologically abused, and that has long-term ramifications. You know, people who get out of abusive relationships, therapy work, I'd argue, would have to be learning how to trust your own natural instinct. Like, you lose a sense of yourself because your perception or your reality or what you understand to be true about the world has been constantly scrutinized, criticized, and used against you. But then if everybody around you is saying gaslight, narcissism, et cetera, et cetera, then you who may be inside of that system feel like, well, I guess this is more of the norm, or maybe this is more normal than I thought. So, like, should I really try to get help? Is this really as... yes, it is.
It seems like it's its own form of gaslighting. No, I'm serious, because what I understand to be gaslighting. You taught me this, and I saw it somewhere else. One of the many videos. Probably look
up the definition, too.
I'm not going to. I'm probably going to look up the definition in a second. But one of the things that I remember learning about it is that if you are truly with somebody who is gaslighting you, in the process of gaslighting, one of the things that happens is that you start to doubt your own reality, right?
Yes.
So what I'm hearing from you is the trivialization of these terms, turning them into everyday things. I'm hearing it do two things. I'm hearing it, I'm hearing the words themselves get diluted, mm-hmm. right?
That's and a then, great word.
And then I'm also hearing you talk about those who are actually living with OCD or anxiety or who are actually being gaslit or who are actually depressed. I'm hearing you say, oh, well, now they're doubting
yes, their, the severity of their illness and their experience.
And now you know what else I'm thinking as well. I'm also thinking of, and I grew up in a West Indian culture where nothing was ever really wrong. So that's also kind of where I bring this thought from. I'm thinking of the people who are like, who have lived around that kind of narrative, that kind of, what's the word? Talking, the language, right? Where I'm not sad, I'm depressed. You know, I'm this, and I'm just so OCD, right? Because it's gotten so trivialized, so diluted, then it makes the people who are not struggling with it, when they come across somebody who's struggling with it, they do not take it as seriously. So, for example, I've been open about my depression on here and in other forums, other places, whatever, right? I can go to somebody and be like, oh, yeah, my name is Chris, I live with depression, this, that, and the other. And if they're a person who doesn't believe in depression because they think that depression just means sadness, and I'm talking about clinical depression, they might respond with like, oh, well, just go for a walk, you'll be fine. It's nothing at all, right? And they're now not taking seriously my experience because they only see it as what society or what the culture is using the word to mean, right? So the word depression no longer means clinical depression. It means sadness. Right. Anxiety, like generalized anxiety disorder, anxiety doesn't mean anxiety. Now it means I'm nervous, right? OCD doesn't mean OCD. It means clean. Bipolar doesn't mean bipolar. It means a little...
fluctuations.
Yeah, right?
Mood swings.
So now I'm seeing how it affects so many different things and not just... Because in my head, I was like, oh, weaponization, that means that it's going to hurt the people who struggle with it, right? But now I'm also thinking about how it's actually hurting them. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about in terms of weaponization that I didn't think about before we jumped into the episode. One of the things I... also on TikTok... TikTok is also a terrible place to get therapy advice. You should go to an actual licensed clinical therapist to go get your therapy.
Although there are some clinicians on there who do speak some good truths about certain things. However, that does not replace working with a mental health clinician.
Right, because they're not able to talk to your...
specific situation. Right,
so you can get truth from them, but you're not going to be able to get the
rehabilitation that you may need.
Right. So there have been a series of TikToks I've seen where it talks about like when your toxic family member goes to therapy, mm-hmm. even beyond the fictional videos that we've seen, I also think about I'll put it in there. I'm thinking about the recent story that came out about Jonah Hill. Have you heard about it? So that's a no. You just it's a no.
Pop culture just.
All right. So there was a. I'll talk about the TikToks first, and then I'll talk about Jonah Hill. Right. Think about it. It's like your toxic family member goes to therapy like three times, and it's like they come home and they're like, "Hi, you don't want dinner? Let's just unpack that right now. Let's because I feel like you're not hearing me. Hear you. And I just feel like what you're doing is gaslighting all of my feelings, and I need you to un-gaslight them. I need you to throw water on the gaslit fire that is my soul.
What?
Now, notice that I used some terms or some things that, like, I've heard in therapy before. All of these tools are being misappropriated and misused, right? The Jonah Hill situation was, I'm going to truncate it so much, and I'm going to be wrong. And
that's okay.
It's fine.
Because we're human. And we still, and Jesus still loves us.
Basically, Jonah Hill was like, there was a text, like a screenshot of a text to his girlfriend came out, and she did something that he didn't, I'm going to look it up. Jonah Hill was dating this woman, and she went surfing, and he sent her a text message after she was surfing, because you don't surf in a full nun's habit. Like,
you wear a bathing suit.
You wear a bathing suit, right? And basically, he sent her a text message of the things that she is not allowed to do. For example, this is some of them. Surfing with men, posting pictures of herself in a bathing suit, friendships with women who are in unstable places, and from her wild recent past beyond getting a lunch or coffee or something respectful, whatever, right? Basically, he sends her a list of things that she's not allowed to do or not allowed to wear, right? Here's the weaponization. He said, I am not the right partner for you. If these things bring you to a place of happiness, I support it, and there will be no hard feelings. These are my boundaries for romantic partnership, my boundaries with you based on the ways these actions have hurt our trust. So basically, the internet came into an uproar over the misuse of the word boundaries, right? What I've learned about boundaries is a boundary is not something that dictates your behavior. It's actually something that dictates mine, right? A boundary says, hi, if you continue to speak to me like that, I am going to blah, 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 blah. It might be preceded with, please don't speak to me like that. But the following is not, if you speak to me like that, you're gonna whatever. It's my response. It's on me, right? And it's not to control the other person, but it's for emotional healing. And I think about that. I've been thinking about that a lot, just because there are people who have gone to 4.5 therapy sessions and are now using the information that they've learned in therapy to further emotionally abuse their partners, emotionally abuse their families, emotionally abuse their congregants, because I'm also speaking about pastors. I don't know any personally. I truly don't. Both cameras. I don't know anybody personally. I'm just saying that it wouldn't surprise me that this exists. There's a guy on TikTok too. He's a great guy, right? Narcissist, right? But almost
proclaimed, diagnosed.
Diagnosed.
By clinicians.
And self-aware, right? And goes to therapy constantly to kind of combat some of those thought processes that come with narcissism. And one of the things he said, and if I can find the video, I'll link it below. One of the things he talked about was the fact that the first time he went to therapy, like, he was looking for things to use when he got back home. Right? Like, that's what he was doing. And the therapist actually called him out on it, because the therapist knew what he was working with, right? But the therapist called him.
He or she, we don't know.
It was a he. He said that it was
he. Just kidding.
The therapist called him out on it. And that was almost like one of the many wake-up calls that he had. But if he had been left unchecked, then he would have gone home and used some of the language and some of the emotional learning to then manipulate his partner and manipulate his friends. And what's the word for weaponization? To harm the people around him, right? So I think that's why it's so dangerous, because it's the misappropriation of tools.
Right.
Yeah.
And even if you're not using it to get at people, just misusing the word could be a sense of weaponization, because it's sowing or spreading discord, confusion, disagreement amongst what is the actual disorder, set of symptoms that we're dealing with, for real, for real. You know who I think is another group of people that experience that is people who have PTSD, like actual PTSD, because a lot of people have experienced trauma. A lot of people have experienced severe trauma. You do not get PTSD because you had to wait in the airport line for 3 hours or your flight got canceled. Like, that's not traumatic unless you saw something or experienced something where your life was actively threatened. The perceived or actual threat of harm or death. That is the DSM definition of it. However, we are now coming to grips with that trauma can be a little bit more extensive emotionally, psychologically. Like, there's different types of trauma happening. So I do want to acknowledge that. However, when people say, oh my gosh, I got PTSD after all my flights got canceled and I had to stay at the airport. No. But there are people who live with post-traumatic stress disorder and it informs their entire life. It's distressing. They don't sleep. They are hypervigilant, meaning that they are ready to, or they're gauging their environment because they don't feel safe in any environment that may be triggering for them. There's just a set of symptoms. I can't go through all of it because we'll be here forever. But we have to understand that weaponizing it, commercializing it, because some of those people who may be commercializing it may be utilizing information that is not scientifically based, that is not clinically based. We haven't even gotten there yet. But the trivialization of it, it's all so harmful to people who actually suffer from mental health disorders. I can tell you right now, as somebody, and I've been open about this, that has been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. You don't want to claim that. If you legitimately experienced OCD, obsessive obsessions, which are intrusive thoughts meaning, oh, I randomly thought about like throwing my phone over the railing of a cruise ship because I don't know, and like, because we've had that intrusive thought, right? That thought came and went. When you have OCD, there are intrusive thoughts that just keep coming over and over again, don't stop, and they cause you so much anxiety and distress that you feel like you have to evoke some sort of action in order to alleviate the distress and anxiety. Do you know people can't work sometimes as a result of obsessive compulsive disorder? If I am worried that if I don't check the oven 5 times every hour, something bad is going to happen to my husband. I can't work. I can't go grocery shopping. I can't leave the house because if I need to check 5 times every hour, well, you can leave the house for like, what, 10 minutes? You can't do that. So imagine the amount of distress people with OCD feel. And then when they hear that term being utilized in any which way form, not recognizing the severity of their own because it's everybody has it apparently. They don't get the treatment that they need. They are even, because OCD and depression also go hand in hand. They get depressed because they're like, I can't treat this. I'm stuck at home. I can't stop these compulsions because I just feel such a high wave of anxiety if I don't do this.
Yeah.
Like, imagine how distressing and how trivializing and how demoralizing it is to live with that and to feel like the world around you will not understand, therefore why bother? I would love to see some of these people who are utilizing these things actually sit with somebody in the middle of a major depressive episode. Imagine, it is not easy. And I'm a mental health clinician and I sit in these assessments and I listen to people's stories. I listen to people dealing with major, these people aren't eating. They're not sleeping or they're oversleeping. They stop working. They can't go to school. They don't shower. And the worst and severe symptom of it, they've attempted to kill themselves multiple times. Trigger warning. I'm so sorry. You're gonna have to put a trigger warning. But this is what people are dealing with clinical depression. And yet we are throwing the term depressed, depressed, depressed. Unless you fit 5 criteria out of those, it causes impairment in your work, school, social, personal life, or subjective distress, not caused by a substance, not caused by a physical ailment. You do not have clinical depression. You may have feelings of sadness. You may have some feelings of guilt. You may have some symptoms of depression. Maybe. I'll give you that. Maybe. But unless you fit the full criterion that is required for a diagnosis, you do not have major depressive disorder. You do not have persistent depressive disorder. There are people who live with depression ongoing for 2 years plus with no type of alleviation, with multiple periods of 2 weeks or more where it's so severe that they can't even function. Like, yes, is there a spectrum? Is there a range with which people experience depression? Yes. But what I'm thinking about those people at the moderate severe level where they feel like they can't get the help that they need because it's like, well, I guess I just have to go outside and walk or do these things or do that thing because that's what, you know, Instagram is telling me and that's what TikTok is telling me, especially people who don't have therapists or don't have that clinical background or knowledge or wherewithal or whatever the heck.
Right. I think this is especially dangerous for the for those who therapy is not accessible easily, so they that have too. To rely on social media. While you were sharing all of that, I think that...
Very passionate about this.
I know. One of the things that I was thinking about and we've talked about when it comes to mental health is one of the struggles is the fact that it's not a... it's not... Often, it's not an outwardly physical ailment unless something has gone horribly wrong, right? If the times that I've been the most depressed, I've also been serving at church. Or the times I've been the most depressed, I've been teaching in front of kids. The times I've been the most... I've also gone home and taken a break, but I'm just saying. And I was trying to think of other, like, diseases that people use in... maybe not everyday talk, but it's kind of seeped into more of our language. And the only one that I can think of is the word cancer, right? When somebody says, oh, that person is a cancer to the organization, right? But that word, when you use the word cancer to describe something in a way that is not talking about the disease, it still carries so much weight because people have an understanding of what cancer is and what cancer does to the body, right? So there is no, there's a slight trivialization of it because we're talking about a person in an organization or too much salt in the seasoning or whatever, right? But at the same time, there's still this weight attached to it because it's saying that this is something that is going to kill the larger organism if it's left unchecked. So it still has... I'm going to use the word reverence. It still has the weight. It still has the reverence of what it's capable of versus when we just say OCD or we say anxiety or we say whatever. Now, before we keep going, I have to put some Bible on it because that's what I'm here for. I keep thinking about the word truth, right? And we, when we're talking about weaponization and trivialization, I think that those are both forms of... removing truth from something, right? When we're talking about somebody being depressed, but they're just sad, right? And I think that it's important that we remove remove weaponization of these words and trivializing these words from our language because truth, the truth matters, right? The truth matters not just to us, but it should matter to us because it mattered to God. And when you look at John 8, 31 and 32, Jesus said to the people who believed in him, you are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And he goes on to talk about people being a slave to sin. But if you continue to the end of chapter 8, he talks about truth in that entire section. So the truth matters. The truth has weight. The truth is important. And if the truth gets diluted, then it's at that point that the truth is no longer the truth. Just like if you take medicine and you dilute it, it's less effective, right? If you take the word depression and you dilute it, you might get some good advice where it's like, you should pray. You should spend time with friends. You should go outside for a walk. You should do this. You should do that. You should do the other. All of those things are helpful, right? But they are not the thing that's going to continue to help you in the long run. And that only happens when we dilute the word depression to only mean sadness, right? That happens when we dilute the word anxiety to only mean nervousness or dilute, you know, that's so the truth matters. And as we continue with with the Job Project, I know that because we've talked about depression before, we've talked about OCD, we're going to talk about gaslighting. All of these things we've talked about or we're going to talk about, right? But all of these, this episode is just pointing to all of those episodes, right? Because we can't take all of the time. I wish we could. I really wish we could and sit and talk about all of them. But because we can't, I really want to hammer home the fact that, like, the truth is important, right? And in this case, the truth is, what is depression? What is OCD? What is PTSD? What is complex PTSD? Like, what are these things? And give them their full weight. So you wanted to say something, so.
So you can utilize the terminology correctly and apply it accordingly. So I wanted to highlight something. So I don't know if this fits under what we're talking about, but you mentioned how sometimes, or some of your times where you're most depressed, you were still serving, you were still working. So they're like, well, if you're not enduring any impairment, is it really depression? Because there's an also another portion to that. Does it cause you distress? Mm-hmm. These symptoms cause you distress. So sometimes when I'm doing these assessments, people are like, I was still able to be around friends. You know, I just put on a mask because I'm used to doing that. I heard that. I'm used to putting on a mask. So nothing really changed my social life. Nothing really changed with school or work because I just did what I needed to do. Quality of work still remained the same. I was still able to bathe and brush my teeth. Cooking was a little bit harder, but I was able to do it. Okay. But was it really distressing for you to experience all of these things? Yes, I think about it every time, every day, all day. I ruminate, which is, means you're just constantly thinking about it over and over again. Like, I want to give notice that these disorders, and this is just to give some grace to, these disorders are very complex. I have interviewed and assessed multiple people with depression, and all of them look so different. Sometimes it's clear cut, other times it's nuanced, but it's still depression. I mean, a lot of them end up in a hospital, so if you're ended up in a psych ward, most of the time it's pretty severe. But I just wanted to highlight the importance of, yes, we are still trying to understand the nuanced nature of mental health. You mentioned cancer. Cancer is pretty nuanced too, I would argue. However, I think because it's physical, it's a little bit more scientific. Not scientific, it's a little bit more, it's easy to identify, it's easy to observe, it's easy to, I guess, diagnose. I don't know what type of words I'm looking for here. It's 8 o'clock, I'm tired. Mental health is difficult to navigate. Our science, our research has limitations. All research does, but psychologically it's pretty tough because, again, people are nuanced. People are taking different medications. People are at different stages in life. Like, there's so many different factors. So I do want to give notice that it is difficult as we navigate what does mental health mean? What are these disorders? How do we utilize the language accordingly? Until we have just very better concrete information, let's use the definitions that are there and that we can look up on Google Scholar and not just, you know, BuzzFeed or TikTok. Even if, well, unless the TikTok person is, you know, a doctorate or a clinician, or I'm not saying doctorate, but person who specializes in it and knows what they're talking about, right? We want to find reputable sources of information. But please know that it is still nuanced. Different people, I'm sure, with ADHD have different symptoms, different experiences, and they share it, but it's not a generalization. I just want to be mindful of that. You know, it is a difficult concept to navigate. And mental, I'm in the field and I learn something new every day. So all to say, yes, there's grace for nuance and messing up the definitions. Yes, if you realize you've been using it out of turn and don't actually fit the clinical definitions, okay, cool. Shout out to you for listening to this and, you know, being humble enough to take that. But also know we got a lot of work to do. Yeah. And that's okay. And until that, like, just base it off the definitions we have. Base it off of what current research is being done by people who study this on a regular basis, and also give grace that it's going to take some time to really get it, and it's okay. Just to balance it out, because, you know, I can be a shoot it, like, no, stop it. We can't do this. It trivializes all of this. And it's also complicated. So there's going to be some misinformation. Maybe not out of ill will. Maybe just a lack of knowledge. Also, stop trying to make money off of people with wrong information. Just because you may have a disorder doesn't mean you have the expertise to talk about it to the extent where
are we going there now?
Sure.
I'm just saying, because you said, also, let's not do this. And you made it sound like it was going to be a sentence by itself. But we have a whole section about commercialization.
It's just, it's just when false information is put out there, not heavily researched information is put out there. It's like, I want people to be careful because now we got people diagnosing themselves on the internet, off of the internet. That can be very harmful for you, for people around you. Especially if you're not self-aware enough to recognize this is giving me notice to certain symptoms that I'm noticing within myself. Yes. However, I do recognize that I need to be properly diagnosed and treated if I have it. Mm-hmm. That is an important boundary, an important distinguishing factor to consider. Yeah. But people are making money off of misinformation. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe not with ill will. Maybe they're like, hey, I have this disorder. These are the things that work for me. I'm going to utilize this knowledge and build a Loki campaign, build a whole type of empire off of it.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I've been very...
problematic a little bit, especially if it's misinformation.
Mm.
I'm done.
I can't remember what I was going to say.
I am so sorry.
So Sia, do you know Sia the singer? She sang the song Chandelier.
Half white wig?
Yes.
I just know that she sings that song and wears a wig that's half black, half white.
So yes.
Like Cruella DeVille. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not saying she is. I'm just...
You know who she is. Great. All right. She was working on a movie called Music, right? And one of the main characters had autism spectrum disorder. The movie bombed. And people hated it. And I just want to read a part of the... This is on Wikipedia. The website's Rotten Tomatoes critics consensus reads, offensive in its depiction of autism and painfully misguided in every respect, Music is a vanity project that begs to be turned down. That's pretty bad. And that's a pretty scathing review. And it made me think about... I'm not saying about Sia's intention. This is just to open up the conversation to the larger commercialization of mental health. Because when I think of the commercialization of mental health, I think of two things. I think of the people on social media and, you know, potentially TV and other places that are selling these either quick cures or selling these, it's basically like snake oil salesmen selling these things that are supposed to be like the silver bullet to finally get your ADHD under control or finally get your hyper focus out of there, or finally get you out of your depressive rut, right? So I think of that, but then I also think of media that is created where a person with a particular mental disorder is front and center, but it's not treated with care, right? And I believe that, first off, I believe that commercialization is also a form of weaponization as well. But I've been thinking about why that's so dangerous, and one of the things I think about is... the first thing is you're making money off of something that is unhelpful, right? You're not supposed to be making money off of this in the way that you're doing, especially because you could be disseminating misinformation, like you said. There's also the fact that, like, you might be giving me really good, really solid advice that works for you. Because that's the other thing about that I learned about mental health is that, like, two people with depression, even if some of their symptoms are the same, they might respond very differently to the same treatment. Because we see that with actual physical medication too, for like mental health and stuff. Like sometimes somebody will take Prozac and be like, that was perfect. And somebody will take Prozac and be like, that was the worst experience of my life. Right. Same thing. Everything. If all things were equal, it's different. Right. So I was just thinking about how people are so quick to offer. And sometimes it's not malicious. Like, right. Like going back to Sia, I am not saying anything about her intent. But I will say it was a movie created by a large studio. It was a movie created in Hollywood, not necessarily an indie flick, you know. For the people on like social media selling stuff, their intentions may be good. And the fact that we're now turning it over into like $500-700 consultations to get a quick fix for your OCD, and it's just a bastardized version of exposure therapy. Like that's one, it's ridiculous. Two, it's dangerous. And three, it's really sinister in how it comes in, right? It's sinister, one, because I know that there are people who create these things so that they can make a quick buck. But I also know that there are some people who, like, this really is their passion, and they are not a mental health specialist. This is why I'm so hesitant on my own platforms to put out like a, here are five things you should do if you have depression. Absolutely not. You will not see me do that on my posts. If I do that as a poem, number five is going to be, don't listen to anything I said in this poem, go to therapy, right? Because my experience can point you to where you should go to get your help and get your truth. And you might learn something from my experience, but my experience is not gospel, right? That's why you need to go to a clinic, a licensed clinician to get your help. But because not everybody has access to a clinician, not everybody has insurance, but they have $20 in their pocket, they're like, maybe this will help. And they're just searching for, and I think that's the part that frustrates me the most, because the people who are going out and buying these consultations and buying these worksheets and buying these different things that are being set out by, you know, various creators across the world, they're desperate. This is something that they need. They're vulnerable. And whether it's intentional or you have good intentions, it's catching them off guard and it's taking advantage of them. And they're coming out on the other side. Some of them might be better, but also some of them are much worse off. Right.
Yeah. Because, again, there are things. And I'm not saying the science of psychology is perfect. It's not. Like many, we are still trying to gain traction. There's a lot of research that is happening where they're trying to understand how neuroscience and psychology can come together so that we can understand some of these more concrete physiological understandings of mental health. It's great. I love that, because again, as whatever we can get and synthesize to help the masses, I'm all for it. If you are creating programming, one, are you an expert in this field? Because again, mental illness is an illness. You have to treat it. People who can treat illnesses are those that have gone to school, have done extensive training, and have done a lot of application of what that training entailed. So they don't just get the knowledge. Pretty sure therapists in New York have to do like 1,000+ hours of supervised therapy, where they are meeting with somebody who is an expert in that field or an expert in their specific craft therapy, in this case, or cognitive therapy, depending on what type of therapy, and are having meetings with them, going over cases, going over situations and getting feedback. And I think supervision can continue regardless of whether you get supervised or you need supervised hours or you complete it and pass your certification exam. But all to say, there's an extensive process to become a clinical psychologist, whether you do research or treatment. That's a 5 to 7 year process where, yes, you're taking classes, but you're also utilizing that knowledge and applying it in real time, which is why I really appreciate my job. Because even though I don't have my doctorate, I have my master's, I have a lot of clinical information and knowledge. the way that I have been humbled in the past 7 or 8 months of being in this job because of me applying that and how much more I'm realizing and learning about the nuance behind it, right? And even I am hesitant to be like, let me diagnose people now. No, I can't. A good clinician is going to take the time to diagnose, is going to take the time with treatment because they have to understand not just the set of symptoms itself, but understand how genetics play a part in symptoms themselves, socioeconomic background, potential traumas you may have experienced. Like, there's so many different nuances that we have to look into before we devise some sort of treatment plan. So unless you have done years of research, have gone through it with comb, teeth, and nail, like searching through what does all of the research have to say about these specific practices for these specific disorders. Like, unless you are going into a deep dive, you are meeting with experts, you're inviting these experts to be a part of the process. Maybe you're just trying to facilitate it. Good for you, you did your due diligence. Hopefully you're successful. If you just did an internet search and are like, I think I have the answers because I applied them and used them and they worked for me and I'm going to build a program off of it. Again, may not be ill-willed, but commercializing it, giving it to people, innocent people, people who are lost, people who are desperate, people who need guidance, and you ain't got no empirical data to support what you're doing. You ain't talked to nobody, experts, no one. That's a problem. Because now you're misinforming people. You could re-traumatize people. Mm-hmm. You can make people realize, if this is what mental health is, why should I bother getting the help that I need? If this is what mental health services and support is, why should I go see a clinician? It's problematic. Yeah. All we're saying is it's problematic. And I feel like we are going beyond an hour at this point. Again, we have this platform to debunk myths and stop over-spiritualizing mental illness. How about we stop weaponizing and commercializing it? Yeah. How about we not use the guise of, pray about it, you should be good? Like, because I feel like Christians are big on trivializing.
I think one distinction I want to make, because one thing I do want to do for the podcast is I want to get T-shirts at some point, right? When I say commercialization, I'm specifically talking about people
who do it for money. Yes, sorry.
Who are selling treatment? Mm. That's specific, like, because
treatment it, specifically.
Because in my head, I'm thinking of, I'm gonna show you these TikToks after we get off. I'm talking about the people who are like, yo, for $700, you can get a consult with me and I'll work through your day-to-day schedule. That's one consult for $700, right? Or this worksheet, you know, this depression journal is going to save your life. The tool by itself is not going to do anything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's very nuanced.
I want to read the scripture because somehow I feel like it fits. This is Matthew 21:12. Jesus came to the temple. He entered the temple and began to drive out all the people buying and selling animals for sacrifice. He knocked over the tables of the money changers and the chairs of those selling doves. He said to them, "The scriptures declare my temple will be called a house of prayer, and you have turned it into a den of thieves." I was thinking about this scripture. I was trying to, I was like, Lord, why are you bringing this, you know, scripture back to my mind? And it kind of just went back to the idea of commercialization. Like, people didn't even wait to be like outside the temple. Like, they were inside the house of God, like selling these things, right? And the purpose of the place was then lost because it turned into a store, right? And I think that, because going back to even the first section, we were talking about weaponization, I feel like we're ultimately talking about a loss of the seriousness of how serious we should be taking mental health.
Yes.
Right? We're losing it because either we're turning the words into something that they don't mean, we're trivializing the experiences of millions of human beings who are experiencing a myriad of different emotional suffering. And mental states and are suffering. And we are exploiting those who are trying to take it seriously, but are choosing to do it in a way that doesn't involve a clinician. That it's just, you know, through this person on LinkedIn. I don't know if people use LinkedIn for that.
Or lacking empirically sound information.
Right.
And experts, yeah. Like, it's problematic.
Right. Listen, if I misused that scripture, put it in the comments. Feel free, right?
I think it's like an example. Like, we're not saying this is the scripture that is telling us to stop. But Jesus was not about the temple being utilized for unintended use. Mm-hmm. It's a place of worship. It's a place to reverence the Lord. Mm-hmm. It's not a place for people to sell sacrifice. It's not people to look and try to gain financial whatever have you. They have completely distorted it and ruined it. So the people that do have the intentions to do so get completely lost. Yeah. And that's the issue. It's like, we don't want people to be completely lost, because again, mental health illnesses can sometimes result in death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's very serious. So we want to be mindful of that. I think God cares about that. God is a big proponent of truth. Now, his truth, ultimately, yes. And in his loving kindness and wisdom, he has provided us doctors, clinicians, people who can he can use to help heal the sick and help rehabilitate those who are struggling.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be a part of that process being diminished, trivialized, demoralized, etc.,
etc. word eyes. I love how, so for context, we filmed our very first episode back yesterday, so I don't know what order it's gonna be in, but I'm just thinking about the fact that, like, we started and we're like, welcome back, jokes, this, that, and the other, and today it was like, hey, you cut it out. Like, the flip was so quick, Valerie.
I mean, that's a part I think people get really surprised by us. They're like, oh my gosh, Chris and Valerie, they're so funny.
They don't get surprised about that with me.
And then they listen to us talk about certain things. They're like, oh wow, they're really deep.
I lead worship at church, and they be seeing me talk about lots of serious things. So clearly, I am the more serious of us two.
I'm on the prayer team. I don't know what he's talking about, but anyways,
whatever.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for watching.
Let us know what you think about this in the comments below.
Or because you're also listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
Feel free to follow us at The Joe Project Podcast on Instagram, and leave us a comment there as well, or send us a DM, or just, you know, slide in. Okay, we're not doing no consults for $700. If you want to give us $700 though to upgrade our little setup, that'd be great, but only if God lays it on your heart. I am not telling you to give me $700.
Say, if God puts it on your heart, who are we to fight with God's
conviction? Like, I'm not gonna fight him. I'm not gonna say, no, take the money back.
People who love me obey my commandments. I'm just saying. The Bible, you love the Lord and he's convicting you, I'm just saying.
Hey, babe, what do I always say? Do you love me?
Feed my sheep.
Feed my sheep. Listen, if you love him, feed his sheep.
We're foolish.
Oh my God.
Have a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, whatever time you're watching this.
Yeah, it's 8:59 over here. Bye.